Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Our world's fast pace of change has created a bigger gap in the way that older and younger people behave than may have existed in earlier generations. A boomer grew up before the internet and was blown away merely by color TV. Gen Z, the so-called Generation Screwed, which was the term used on the cover of Newsweek recently, Gen Z never saw a day when he or she couldn't connect with anyone at any time or get any information instantly on the net. A boomer's parents were the World War II generation. Suck it up. Work your way up for 20 years in the company until you finally can get to blow your nose without getting three permissions to do so. Many more young people are more likely to identify with Occupy than with an occupation. They want to have a seat at the table in year one on the job. And yet, in today's workplace, boomers, Gen Xers, Gen Yers, and now Gen Zers, those Generation Screweds, all are scurrying around in today's workplace cauldron. Can't we just get along? To help us figure it out, my guest this morning on Work with Marty Nemko is Bruce Tolgan. He is, for two decades now, he's conducted countless in-depth interviews of young people in the workplace. He's the author or co-author of 18 books, including Managing Generation X. Another book was called Not Everyone Gets a Trophy, How to Manage Generation Y. And a few weeks ago, an article in USA Today, Gen Z, America's Most High-Maintenance Workforce. Bruce's work has been the subject of thousands of news stories around the world, and he's written for the New York Times, the Harvard Business Review, and the like. He also holds a fifth-degree black belt in karate. Bruce Tolgan, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
My pleasure. Well, you know, it's obviously dangerous to make generalizations about an entire generation where there's so many individual differences. Is there enough commonalities across a Gen an X, a Gen Y, a Gen Z, to make those inferences worth making, or is it more like a horoscope stuff and it's really not worth doing?
Well, the way we look at it, we've been doing research on generational difference in the workplace for 18 years, and the way we look at it is that there are broad trends in attitude and behavior that do change with each generation. Of course, it's also true that within each generation, there are as many stories as there are people. You know, there are a lot of details. If you really drill down and start looking, every individual is his or her own unique story. But there are broad trends in attitude and behavior. And sometimes people ask us, well, yeah, sure, some of this is just about being young or just about being old. But it even goes beyond that. It goes to the historical influences that one grew up with and the historical influences that are primary at each life stage.
Fair enough. So let's start talking about the youngest generation. Your most recent writing is about Gen Z, which I find myself amused at calling it Generation Screwed, which is the what I just said was on the cover of Newsweek. You call them America's most high-maintenance workforce. These are the young people probably, roughly 15 to 25. Is that right? Something like that?
Yeah, well, we're looking at people born 1990 and beyond. And the truth is, demographers don't agree about the exact parameters of each generation. So it's a work in progress. We're trying to figure out where is the next break. And some people look at the whole millennial generation, those born 1978 to 2000. To me, that's ridiculous because 12-year-olds just don't have that much in common with 34-year-olds.
Yeah, right.
How could they be part of the same generation? So one thing we're doing to try to make it more meaningful is we're looking at smaller and smaller demographic slices and looking at the key influences that shaped each of those generations.
All right, so we realize it's a work in progress. We realize that we need to make the parameters narrower. So let's take the newest group of folks who are entering the workforce. Those who are entering the workforce after high school, they're 18 or something like that. Those who are doing it after college are 22, 23, 24. So let's look at roughly the 18 to 24 age slice. And what, recognizing that it's a work in progress, what legitimate generalizations can reasonably be made, if any?
Well, what our research shows that we call them children of the 2000s. And they simultaneously grew up way too fast, but you could say they also never grew up at all. Yes, from a dangerously young age, they've been privy to everything with unprecedented access to information. And yet they've also been isolated and scheduled as children never have been. So just as throughout the booming 90s, we were monitoring the shift from Generation X to Generation Y, what we've been looking at is this shift to Generation Z. You know, this is a generation that was shaped by nearly a decade of war and economic uncertainty. If you look at those born in 1990, they were 11 years old on 9/11, ever since we've been at war. Today's college graduates, they finished high school in 2008, just as we entered the Great Recession. Now, if you look at the class of 2012, they're coming in amidst a stumbling recovery where unemployment is stubbornly high, especially for those under 25. So what we're seeing is a big shift from those who came into the workforce even just 10 years ago and those who are coming into the workforce today.
I want to hear what the implications, because this show focuses about work. I want to know what implications that has for people of any age working with those young people, given those historical antecedents. What does that mean for workers? But I do want to ask this first. You know, the assumption you made, you said people have in this generation, this, 15 to 25-year-olds, have greater access to information than anybody has had before, which is certainly true. You say they're scheduled, but isn't that looking at it through a very middle and upper class lens? You know, we constantly hear about the digital divide, and there's all these poor people who don't have as much access, and their parents are not over-scheduling them. They're latchkey kids who are basically being left alone. Are your inferences that we're making primarily applicable to the middle class and above?
Well, you might think that, and absolutely you're right that socioeconomic differences are probably the key difference when you look through this lens.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, if you look at that same socioeconomic slice and compare it to, say, 10 years prior or 20 years prior or 30 years prior, you do see the same basic generational trends unfolding. It's just that what it means for one group might be very different than what it means for another group.
Okay, let's take a look for a moment at the, I don't know, do you want as I said, I wanted to get to the question of, okay, so now let's say I am 40 years old and I'm in the workplace and I have a number of people who are 18, 20, 22, 24, and while they each have their individual stories, you say there are legitimate inferences that can be drawn. What inferences can I draw in working with that group, whether they be middle class or poor, or is it separate for the two?
Well, I think what we look at are the common denominators. And so I always say, what should the grown-ups know about Generation Z?
Right.
And here's what our research is showing so far. They're very dubious about their long-term prospects, and they're very fearful about today, tomorrow, and this week.
So are boomers. So is everybody. My boomer clients, my Gen Xer clients are terrified in the job market now. Is there?
Well, you're absolutely right. The difference is that 18-year-olds are now competing with 40-year-olds for entry-level jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so how that plays out, as you point out, if you're an accountant and you're trying to get a job as an accountant, that may be different from if your best bet is to work behind the counter at Subway. And yet, that is the common denominator, is that they're experiencing this profound downturn and potentially beginning of a downward spiral in our economic prospects. They're experiencing that at a particular life stage. And so what our research shows is that, yes, we're all living through these changes together, but depending on what life stage you're at, when these changes unfold, that does have a big effect on how you experience it.
So what I want to understand is, again, I want to keep you focused on the question. The question is, I'm in the workplace. I may be 25, 35, 45, 55, 65, but now I have a number of people who are between 15 and 25 in my workplace. We agree we have certain shared common experiences. That is the economic malaise, the historical antecedents may be different. I today, Monday morning, tomorrow morning, I'm going into work, and I want, having listened to this segment on Work with Marty Nemco with Bruce Togan, I want to have a little more savvy or sophisticated filters through which the way in which I view my 15 to 25-year-old coworkers so that I can be more effective in working with them. What should I take away?
Well, one thing is they're less likely to resist authority than Gen Yers, just their immediate predecessor generation. That's good news, I think. But they only seek long-term connections with those who seem like they're willing to provide them with extraordinary level of personal support. We sometimes call it in loco parentis management. Remember that they're used to looking at parents, teachers, and counselors as folks who want to hold their hand and take care of them. So that's what they're looking for. The big myth is that they want work to be fun, that they want to be humored, that they want to be left alone. What we're seeing a number of shifts. So Generation Z, the newest, youngest people, are much more likely than Gen Yers to disagree quietly with employers' missions or policies or decisions or work conditions, but they're less likely to share those views publicly than Gen Yers were. Gen Zers are more likely to be obedient to their immediate supervisors' rules, but they're also more likely to challenge inflexible employment conditions. They always are trying to get a special deal for themselves. So they're a little less wearing their needs and expectations on their sleeve the way Gen Yers did. You know, in 2000, when young people were coming into the workplace, they'd show up on day one and say, I'm here, and I want that office, and I don't want to work on Thursdays, and hey, when do I get a raise and a promotion? Today's young people are more circumspect, and they're more like a deer in the headlights when they walk in the door.
Okay, well, I'm trying to picture this. If I were, I can't imagine that across any generation, when somebody's young, they have these mixed feelings. They, on the one hand, of course, they don't want to have to pay a lot of dues. They would love, if they feel that they have abilities, they'd like to move up fast. They're idealistic, and they want to share their ideas early on high and have them implemented. But they desperately are looking for a mentor, somebody to shepherd them through the ropes, because they're scared to death. And as you said, deer in the headlights, you know, saying, okay, you know, I spent my life as a student and as a kid in my house so far. Now I've got to be in this workplace thing. I don't know how to work. I don't know about work. How does this work? So I would think that for time immemorial, those would be the panoply of feelings that everybody would have. What is the, how solid is your evidence that this really is a generational shift, or is it merely sampling error?
Well, no, some of this is just about being young. You're absolutely right. And the nuances in the data, you know, we've been doing this research for 18 years, so we've been able to track these adjustments shifts, and in some cases they're small shifts. In some cases they're much bigger shifts. But some of these things are just about being young. What we try to do in our research is look at where do these natural attitudes and behaviors, where do these natural life stages that everyone goes through, where did they intersect with the accidents of history that make each generation a little bit different?
Mm-hmm.
For example, the 1990s and 2000s, we argue, are two very distinct eras. Technology acceleration alone amounts to historic change. Even the helicopter parenting has redoubled qualitatively. You know, in the 1990s, it was the late boomer focus on self-esteem. To the 2000s, it was the Gen Xer parent focus on safety and cultivation. So the kids who are coming out today, the Gen Zers, their natural habitat is one of physical atomization and relative inactivity, but also total connectivity. They're used to feeling worldly, highly engaged in a virtual peer ecosystem, while also enjoying the discourse of protection and direction from elders. So some of those things are related to the natural life stages that everyone goes through, but there is this qualitative shift historically. So every generation is a little bit different based on the historical accidents that they grew up with.
You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My guest is Bruce Tolgan. He is the author of 18 books, including Managing Generation X, Not Everyone Gets a Trophy, How to Manage Generation Y. That's the subtitle. It's How to Not Everyone Gets a Trophy, How to Manage Generation Y. And a few weeks ago, an article in USA Today, Gen Z, America's Most High-Maintenance Workforce. There's one thing that nobody could argue with. It's not subtle, and that is that indeed, younger people, and again, we forget about the boundaries, certainly people who are anywhere from 15 to 30 are ever more choosing to connect virtually, you know, texting, joining LinkedIn groups or Facebook conversations, etc. What advice do you have for people who are 40, for whom, you know, people over 40 do use technology all the time, but it is not as central for them? If I am a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old or a 60-year-old who is working with people who are in their 20s and 30s who are all about connection, the obvious logical thing is to simply say, you know, let's go with it. Let's make sure that we can, we'll have you be very involved in social media and in the internet, et cetera, as part of your job as much as possible. Beyond that obvious technique, what else should other people keep in mind as they deal with young people who are getting all of their information and human connection through bits and bytes?
Yeah, well, my advice to our clients is not, hey, turn everything into a computer game and plug into every connectivity desire of today's young people. I think that's overdoing it. Sometimes what they need is a sort of back to basics more of the one-on-one, eyeball-to-eyeball, old-fashioned a conversation, and sometimes, frankly, they lack the basic interpersonal skills because they have spent so much time interacting with people in digital media. So you have to strike a balance, and I always tell employers, the good news is the work comes first. Focus on the work first and the requirements of the work. But I also think it's a big mistake to write off the savvy that young people have when it comes to menu-driven information systems, social media, wiki collaboration technology, instant messaging. They are onto something. That's where we're all headed, and to them it comes very naturally. But sometimes I'll go into an organization and they're trying to retool their training and communication and collaboration practices because they think that's what young people want and need, or they think, well, that they're good at. My own view is that that's overdoing it. Young people, they do want the latest and greatest technology, but it's not just a desire for the coolest toy. Their technology imperatives are constant connectivity with whomever they want. That's good for business. Immediate access to whatever information they need, that's good for business. A total customization of their information environment, sometimes that's good for business, sometimes it's not. The ability to learn from and collaborate with real experts in real time, that's usually good for business. For business leaders, it's not such a big puzzle. You don't need to humor young people. You need to facilitate their success as it relates to your business.
I want to kind of riff on one core concept, which you just were implying, that you know, whatever advantages technology have, which are profound and absolutely to be embraced, there is some value to the real-time, human-to-human connection and communication skills that ultimately end up being key to, quote, closing the deal, whatever the deal is. I want to advocate for that in the following way. I want to advocate for it in terms of a practical bottom-line sense and also a cosmic meaning of life sense. In terms of the practical sense, of course, for gathering data, gathering information, it's merely being what I call transactional. What do you think of this? Get feedback. You know, you approve this, approve that. It's very highly efficient, and we must embrace that. But ultimately, the very largest decisions, things like which company should acquire, whether I should acquire this company or not, should I adopt this technology or not, should I promote you or not. That comes down to a less transactional and more emotional set of connections between two people, because in the end, egos really do drive decision-making. And so unless you supplement in a major way the technological efficiencies that accrue through bits and bytes communication with true human connection, and even those that are not transactional, but just getting together for coffee and talking about your baby or your fear of death, or you're worried about being a bag lady or whatever, unless you supplement it with that and know the art of creating deep connection, all the bits and bytes won't work at all. So, and also finally, you know, I'm a guy who has spent my life obsessing. I work 80 hours a week, and I try to make a huge difference in the world. And as I look back on my life, I like to think I still have a couple of decades left, but as I look back on my life, I ask, how much difference has I really made? Not that much. Maybe the advice that my next-door neighbor, who was both a plumber and a PhD from Berkeley in philosophy, gave to me, he said, in the end, Marty, what, you want to make the biggest difference? Be nice. So maybe we don't have to be quite that transactional. Maybe we try to create deep connection with individuals, whether or not it leads to closing a deal, merely because it's about as big a difference as we're likely to make as individuals among the 7 billion on the planet. And coincidentally, it may end up making us more effective in the workplace. Bruce Tilghan, what's your reaction to that?
Well, I think you're making very deep points, and they may be beyond my ken because I'm not a philosopher. But I will say, you know, I think it's a different equation if you're an employer or if you're a boss, because then you have power over someone else's livelihood, as opposed to as an individual pursuing your own success. So I think the advice you just gave is brilliant advice to any individual, that don't lose the opportunities to build real deep connections, real deep loyalties, to have transformational effect on others and to invite others to have a transformational effect on you. And frankly, for today's young people, I often tell them the way to set yourself apart in today's world is to know how to have an eyeball-to-eyeball conversation, to know how to extend personal vulnerability, to know how to go to bat for someone, to know how to connect with someone on a deep level that so many people lack those skills, those interpersonal skills, that to set yourself apart. And that's not just true for young people. It's true for people of any age.
Exactly.
That as an individual pursuing your own happiness and your own success, I think that's you know, that's very powerful and frankly very deep advice.
And so
when I'm advising business leaders and managers, I like to tell them, hey, you know, don't get too carried away. Before you can have a transformational effect on someone, you got to take care of the transaction. The people come to work because they want to make a living. That yes, of course, people are looking for deeper meaning in their work, but most people go to work because they got to take care of their family. And I think a lot of bosses let themselves off the hook when it comes to taking care of the basic transactional details of the work relationship. So I think it's a different question if you're a boss as opposed to, you know, if you're thinking about your own success and your own career and your own happiness.
Let's flip the ages a little bit. Today, many people who are in their 20s and 30s are bosses to people who are in their 40s, 50s, and 60s. Got a big generational difference there. What advice do you have to the people who are listening to the show who are in their 20s and 30s or early 40s who are managing people who are in their 50s or 60s?
Well, the first thing I always tell them is when you look at this person and you think, gee, that person might have been working here when I was in the second grade, yeah, that context matters. Age and experience and wisdom do matter. And experience and wisdom are things you cannot accelerate the learning curve on. On the other hand, hey, if you're the boss, that's a huge responsibility. Somebody has invested you with that power. You have control over very important decisions that affect people's livelihood and their ability to make a contribution. So what I tell young people is don't try to make this up. Don't go with your gut. Don't just do what feels right. Good habits feel right. Bad habits feel right. You know, habits feel right. So if you're new and young and you're in a position of power in relation to other people's livelihoods, you got to learn the basics of supervision first. That is making sure that everybody who reports to you has clear expectations relating to concrete actions within their control, that people know what's up to them and what's not, what are the guidelines and parameters, who's going to be keeping score and how are they going to be keeping score. And you got to give people meaningful feedback on an ongoing basis. I think a lot of young people, when they're in a position like that, they vacillate between soft-pedaling their authority because they're insecure, and then losing their temper or imposing consequences because they're saying, oh, nobody's taking me seriously. Don't you get it? I'm the boss.
Right.
And that's like being a parent who doesn't teach kids the standards, doesn't hold them to a high standard, but every once in a while you come down like a ton of bricks. There's a lot of power in being a boss, and you have to respect it and use it responsibly.
That makes perfect sense to me. I'm just going to add on that, not differ at all. I like to think that, you know, I'm going to support your point that there can be generational inferences that can be reasonably drawn, while it's still critical to remain open to the fact that it could be wrong in a situation. So, for example, if I'm 25 or 30 and I've got a boss who's 60, the chances statistically are, yes, that that person has acquired a lot of experience that may help inform their decisions. They may have a little more perspective. They may be less technologically savvy. They may be less willing to work 60 hours a week. They may be feeling crappy about the idea that now at age 60, they got to have a 30-year-old boss. So I will go into a meeting with that person, if I'm a 30-year-old managing a 60-year-old, with those preconceptions. I won't have them ossified. They will not be locked in, but I will start with those preconceptions and try to validate if that's true. And whether or not, and I would probably at some point, if those assumptions turn out to be kind of right, I might say something like this if I were the 30-year-old talking to the 60-year-old. I say, I imagine it must feel a little weird. You're 60. You've had so much experience being bossed by some fresh-faced 30-year-old. I wanted you to recognize that I am delighted to have you, to be working with you, and I hope to take advantage of the years of wisdom that you have that I can't have at age 30. But I also encourage you, there are some things that younger people may have advantages in terms of technology or even energy or whatever, that we are a team, and I may be officially called your boss, and yes, there may be a time I will have to say, here is what your accountability is, here's what you got to do, whatever, but I'm not one of these authoritarian bosses who just treats everybody the same. I'm here to be your support. So if there is mentorship you want to give me, or even mentorship you would like from me in terms of what younger people do technologically, whatever, I hope we'll keep the door open so that together we make an awesome team. Is there anything off base about what I've just said in my little pitch to the older worker if I'm a 30-year-old supervising a 60-year-old?
Well, I think that's exactly the attitude to go in with. There are certain things you have to be careful about saying because people over a certain age fall into a legally protected
classification. Yeah, I know.
But I won't get into that.
Right. It's a real problem,
though. I'm not admitted to the bar in California.
You're right. It's a real problem.
So you have to be a little bit careful about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the general thrust of what you're saying is exactly right. And in many ways, that's the right conversation to have with anybody who is reporting to you for the first time. And here's where I go way beyond generational differences. To me, generational difference, it's a diversity lens. It's very useful to understand where people may be coming from and where they're going. But every single person has to be treated as an individual. It's not enough to think of you can't ask somebody for their driver's license and then know how to manage them. You have to get to know, who is this person at work? What is this person's strengths? What are this person's weaknesses? What are the best ways to leverage this person? What are the best ways to help this person avoid pitfalls? And that is apart from, or at least way beyond, what generation is this person a part of.
Yep.
And if you're anybody's manager of any age or any generation, the right thing to do is to go in with as much understanding as you can without knowing the person, and then try to get to know the person much, much better and try to build a mutual dialogue, an ongoing dialogue about the work that you share, about the work that you have in common.
I want to give our listeners, I'm going to take one or maybe two phone calls. I'm going to give out the phone number. If you have a problem that you're facing in generationally with somebody in the workplace, either somebody significantly older than you or somebody significantly younger than you, and you believe the generationality, if that's a word, is at the core of a problem that you are having with him or her, I invite you to call to ask Bruce, and I'd be happy to also take a shot at it, to tell us about your problem. We'll see if we can solve it. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for calls to come in, let me ask you just one question. I want you to imagine that you were giving a talk, and it was in a stadium, and it was filled with Generation Zers, you know, people 15 to 25 years old, say. And the talk was titled, "The Two or Three Most Important Work-Related Pieces of Advice for Gen and Zers." What would those two or three points you'd most want to make? Well, actually, you know, let's take the calls first, and then we'll have you capstone our interview with that question. So
okay,
let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Bruce Tolgan. What's your question or comment for him?
Hi, thanks for having me on. Enjoying the show.
I'm glad.
So let me start out just to say my situation is I'm in a supervisor position in the mental health field, and my transition into this position occurred a couple years ago, and it happened in part because my boss ended up gotten ill and had to take leave.
Mm-hmm.
And the circumstances at the time, there had been some talk about me being put into this kind of a role prior to then, but nothing had been solidified. And so I was moved into this role, and how it relates to the topic you're talking about is there was one staff person who had been there, senior to me, and is generationally probably, I guess a good 10, 15 years senior to me. And there's been tremendous difficulty in this transition, specifically with this coworker. That all make sense so far?
Yeah.
So, you had me thinking, listening to the show, how much of this is generational as opposed to sour grapes? You know, the younger guy got the job instead of me, and we're still working that through. But I thought there might be something for me here around maybe I can add to, my ways of responding this, thinking a bit more from the generational piece.
Bruce, Bruce, do you have something you want to say or ask?
Yeah, what I would say is anytime you take over a team on which you've been a peer with other people, or maybe you've even been junior to some of the other people, and now all of a sudden they're reporting to you. And it's even more complicated if some of those people have more experience, have more time, have more seniority, or somehow feel they have a claim on that authority. And so it's incumbent on you to reach out to every one of those people. I would sit down with the team and say, hey, we've had a changing of the guard here, and let me talk with you about your expectations and what you're hoping for, and let me tell you what I'm planning to do, and here's how I'm going to lead, and you're not laying down the law. You can't be, there's new sheriff in town, but you also have to be very careful about soft-pedaling your authority. And then you need to start a dialogue with every individual. And if there's a particular issue with this individual, you just have to stay focused on spelling out work expectations and monitoring and measuring the work that this person's doing. You have to demonstrate that you're qualified, that you're the right person for the job. You have to be a good manager and help this person avoid unnecessary problems, help this person get more work done better and faster. Keep talking about what you need this person to do and what role you need this person to play. It turns out that some people are just have bad attitudes or some people are troublemakers. But if you give a person a chance to get comfortable in that new relationship, oftentimes they will.
Mm-hmm. What,
thank you. Very helpful. Yeah.
Is that very helpful? I'm glad.
It is helpful.
Okay.
Yeah, it's some basics that were unavailable to me a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Better late than never. But I'm learning some of that as you spoke about already. But
it's helpful. It's very helpful.
It's amazing.
It's not crazy to try to clear the air with that person and don't get into a long conversation with a box of Kleenex, but just say, hey, you know, I realize that I need to be more effective in playing my role with you, and frankly, you need to be more effective in playing your role with me, and let's talk about how to go forward, not about problems, but about spelling out how we're going to succeed going forward. Yeah, great.
Well, I'm going to thank you very much for the call. All the lines have lighted up, so clearly we have struck a chord. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Bruce Tolgan. What's your question or comment regarding intergenerational working with each other? That's a really awkward way to say it, but anyway, you get the point. What's your question or comment for him?
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, great. My name is Madison. I'm a former entrepreneur, had a business, went out of business years ago, have had to work for other people, and I'm having interviews now with people who are at least 30 years younger, and I have one coming up tomorrow in a business where I was in a much higher level of the hospitality trade, and now I'm talking with somebody in a shopping mall, and I really have a hard time going into these interviews. I had one just last week, and I didn't, quote, dumb it down enough, and clearly I was feeling superior, and, you know, it blew the interview off the charts in a bad way, and I'm wondering for tomorrow's thing, since I really need to work, you know, it's a lot of stuff. I have to counter shame about being older, about having lost my business, about this is an economic decision for me, not a pleasurable career move that I would want to make if things were financially better. But I'm wondering how you go into a job interview, because I do find it difficult if somebody's sitting in front of me significantly younger. I don't even find that the interviews are as well conducted as they were years ago. So it's really a hard game for me to play.
Bruce, do you want to take it or you want me to take it?
Well, by all means, it's your show.
Well, either way, but it's who's better served. I do have an answer, and Bruce, you can follow up if there's something you want to say. You know, it's going to be an odd kind of a word that I'm going to ask you to keep in mind as you go into the interview, and the interview is gratitude. The word is gratitude. What I mean by that is this. Let's agree that that person's, the 30-year-old's a crappy interviewer, and let's say they're stupid and inexperienced and everything else. But if, in fact, you get hired, that you can then have the opportunity to bring your wisdom and greater intelligence and maybe even better interviewing skills slowly, tactfully to bear in that situation if you need that job. So if it's what's really required is that attitude adjustment to be grateful for what you have, that you've made it to be an older woman who's still viable and able to work and who can bring so much, and view that other person instead of, oh, I can't stand the thought of dealing with that person, or I'm so ashamed of failing in my business, which millions of people do, but make the one word that governs how you function in that interview, one of gratitude. And if there's a second word, is I am going to bring my, or phrase, I'm going to bring my wisdom to the table. To what extent do you believe, Madison, that that will be helpful?
Well, I certainly have good people skills, and this is a sort of a people skills selling kind of thing. But I also realize, and that's why I'd love to get the other gentleman's input as well, and what you said is amazingly spiritual, so it hits me deeply, and thank you for that. I feel, I lost my train of thought on what I was going to say. I feel like it's sometimes hard because I think they expect somebody younger to be walking through the door.
And they do. I'm going to interrupt you. They will. There are going to be some employers who all they want is somebody who's 25, and you're not going to get that job. You need to go in and sell who you are, and if what they're looking for is 25 years old, so be it. It wasn't meant to be. Bruce, what would you like to add?
Yeah, I mean, I think your advice is superb because it hits at such a deep level. But listen, here's what I would add, that if you really have the wisdom of your experience, then take a deep breath and think about where you are. Context is everything, and it's not where you'd like to be, but it's where you are. And remember that what a lot of young people today really lack is the old-fashioned followership skills. You know, everyone wants to be a leader, but very few good leaders don't know also how to be a good follower. So go in thinking, you know what, I know how to be a good follower. I've been around the block a few times. I have that savvy. I can make you feel great about who you are and your role, and I can make you feel like I'm going to help you look good. I'm going to be a good follower, and you're going to be such a good follower that, you know, pretty soon, you know, maybe you'll be that person's boss.
Was that
okay,
help?
So you're saying that, but that's not anything that you verbally say out loud to them. You don't say, I'm going to follow well. You just say, I'm going to take directions. I mean, it's a little hard because I ran a company doing this, and they are hiring for a manager position. So thank God it's not to be one of the little Indians. It's to manage the Indians, but it's to manage the Indians working under these two 30-year-olds or 30-somethings.
Yeah, the one thing you don't want to do is go in and say, look, I had your job when you were in the second grade, kid, so if you think I'm not up to it, I could do, you know, walk circles around you on this. You got to be very careful about that, but you can say, I have a lot of experience, and this is exactly the role I'm looking for. I know I can add a huge amount of value here. I know I can learn a lot from this. I know I can learn a lot from you, too. I'm a very quick study. My number one goal is to get in early and stay late, to bend over backwards and jump through hoops, to dot every I, cross every T. You know, demonstrate your knowledge. Use your knowledge about the industry and the tasks and responsibilities to talk the talk. Don't say, I've been there, I had a job a whole lot bigger than yours a long time ago, but rather use what you know to say, oh, I can imagine doing this task very well, and describe the task and say how you've done it and how you do it.
Madison,
I know this responsibility. This is how I've done it. This is how I would do it.
Madison, I would actually disagree a little bit here. Everybody goes into every job interview saying, oh, it's the perfect job for me. It's a dream job. I'm excited. And employers know that's BS. I believe you will both be more likely to get the right job and also feel better about it and not feel oily if you go in and say, yes, I would have loved it if my business would have succeeded, but here are the reasons that it didn't. I made these mistakes, but these things were simply the economy or whatever. But I'm attracted to this job for these reasons. I think I bring these things to the table. I am going to have to work a little bit on the idea that I'm not the CEO anymore. And I would be lying to you if I told you it's a dream to be working for people who have had much less experience than I am. But we all have challenges. But here are the strengths. Here are the weaknesses. I'm going to try to work on the weaknesses. If I like to think I'd be a good choice. If you come off with that kind of integrity, certainly the wrong employer is not going to hire you. They just want to hear the stupid language. You know, I'm uniquely qualified for the position. I'm thrilled. I love it. It's perfect. But the right employer will welcome you. Does that make sense, Madison?
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you guys so much. Very profound show.
You're very welcome.
Thanks
for calling. It's so great, Bruce, that we have callers on the line. So we're going to keep you on the air if you've got time.
Absolutely. And by the way, I love what you said. You know, honesty, if you can say what's true, that's always your best bet. You know, what I was really trying to say to your caller is, hey, try to feel that and then be honest. I would never suggest to somebody that they try to make believe.
Fair enough. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemko. My guest is Bruce Tolgan. He is one of the leading experts on the different generations in the workplace. He's written two well-known books. One is called Managing Generation X, Not Everyone Gets a Trophy. Managing Generation X is one book. The other book is Not Everyone Gets a Trophy, subtitled How to Manage Generation Y. Unless you think that he has stopped there, the current generation is alternately called Generation Z, or what Newsweek called Generation Screwed. He wrote an article a few weeks ago in USA Today called Gen Z, America's Most High-Maintenance Workforce. Let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. Bruce Tolgan, what's your question or comment for him?
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
I have a comment and a question. My comment is I'm pretty close to the age of that woman who just called, I believe. And I just would like to say that the subtext of any interview is, how is this person going to help me, support me, make my life easier?
Right.
And if you go in with the attitude that I'm too good for you, I've had more experience than you'll ever know, you're just shooting yourself in the foot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You've got to have humility. You have to look at the other person and say, how can I really make this person's life better?
Right.
And so that's all I would like to say about that. I have a question. My son is graduating from college. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know.
Right.
Good luck. Give him my vote. But and I'm wondering, what is the comportment and attitude and things he can see on his resume? Any helpful hints you might have about how he can go about presenting himself to potential employers? And this is like admin jobs or restaurant jobs or any kind of jobs from, you know, across the spectrum, just some general ideas. If we accept that this data that you've collected is true, then given that, you know, how can he make use of it to his own advantage?
Okay, Bruce, you want to take it or you want me to take it?
We make a pretty good tag team. I can go first if you want.
Yes, please do.
Yeah, I mean, one thing is, of course, you want to emphasize all of your legitimate qualifications and all of your legitimate experience and try to build that up as best as you can. I honestly think that what most employers are worried that young people are lacking today is the old-fashioned basics and good self-management skills and the ability to make yourself a good workplace citizen, being a good problem solver, not a complainer, being somebody who can appreciate context, understands that, hey, people have been here for 20 years and I'm just showing up. So the extent to which he can position himself, make it clear that he's good at self-management, that he's prompt and polite, and all of these old-fashioned basics, that's a really good way to set yourself apart in today's environment, because that's what they're worried about with young people. Yeah, they have the technical savvy, they're great with computers, they got a lot of energy, but they don't say please and thank you, they don't understand that people have been here for decades when they were in school, they don't know how to be a good workplace citizen. So that's a way, that's a very subtle way, and intangible, but very powerful.
I agree, and we'll be, like you said, we'll be a good tag team here. I agree with all that, and I think the way you convey that is, in some sense, a sense of humility when he writes. You know, when he writes his application letter or cover letter, or he interviews himself, he says, if I were him, I'd be saying, I would focus more on the admin job than the restaurant job. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'd get my skills up to speed, because most college degree holders don't have the skill. I mean, admin really should be quite expert in everything from Photoshop to Excel spreadsheets to Google Docs. To, you know, there are some technical chops, and simply typing speed, you know, those are admin skills. So he needs to sell those hard skills. But agreeing completely here with Bruce, he needs to convey that he has the humility that is often absent in many young people, whether it be in this generation or those before. They always think people over 30 can't be trusted. They're idiots. They don't get it. And a sense of humility that says, yes, I have a college degree, but I fully recognize that I'm just starting out and am eager. I am kind of a blank slate. I'm a piece of clay that is kind of ready to be molded. I'm looking for a ethical and successful boss who will mentor me, perhaps in his image, but certainly teach me how to be the kind of admin that he will be proud of and that will serve him or her well. So that kind of humility and stressing the advantage of a young person, that person is not ossified into, you know, calcified into ways that are unchangeable, treating that as a plus, I think would be the right balance, the balance of the technical chops as well as the soft skills. And the reason I prefer the administrative job to the restaurant work is, so he's not working nights and weekends all the time. The restaurant culture, people who work in restaurants, after the place closes down, they're often just getting drunk and stoned together. There's more of a launch pad for a career starting as an admin, proving that he has really got the potential to grow, and there'll be more opportunities to move up to more interesting work than I think in a restaurant. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, although I'd like to add, you know, if he's really interested in the restaurant industry, then, you know, head straight there. There's an awful lot of people in this world who have good jobs working in restaurants. But I totally agree. If he's not interested in the restaurant industry, then go for the other opportunity.
Okay. Anyway, was that helpful?
Yes, it was very helpful. And I'd just like to say that my son and many of his friends actually err on the side of self-effacement and too much modesty.
I see. Well, like everything else is balanced. And if they're too so... Right. But I do think that self-deprecation in a young person, even my wife, who's the Napa County Superintendent of Schools, she's on the state superintendent's cabinet. You know, she and I emceed a fundraiser last night. And she did... She was just totally self-effacing. She was making fun of herself. Yeah. And you know what? That's endearing. Whether you're high level or low, I think I'd much rather err on the side of modesty than the, you know, in the 60s or in the 50s, there was this, you know, huckstery, you know, hard sell approach. The days of that are long gone, especially here in the Bay Area, where that's just viewed as, you know, shallow.
Yeah.
Anyway,
thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let's take one more call, and then let's make sure that we give you a chance for that last question I said I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco with my guest, Bruce Tulligan. What is your question or comment relating to a generational problem?
Did you lose weight this week?
It's you. No, I didn't lose you. I've just found you. Are you there? Let's go to the next line.
Hello?
Yes. We didn't lose you. We just found you.
Okay. So I am 60 years old.
Mm.
I work for the Department of Rehabilitation, working with people with disabilities mm-hmm. who want to get to work. Mm-hmm. And my caseload is teenagers, high school students, who are working with me to make plans for their after high school employment goals. Mm-hmm. And one of the problems I have with them is on the telephone, because sometimes they'll call me and they won't say who they are,
mm-hmm.
and they won't, or if they get an answering machine, they might just hang up.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to tell them that my phone at work doesn't have a caller ID, and I won't know, but I can't seem to get across to them telephone etiquette. Do you have any?
You bet. Script. Give them a script. When you call, here is what you say. Here is what the voicemail, you know, what if you're leaving voicemail. Give them a script to work from. That'll give them a concrete vision for what to do. And, of course, you leave a space within the script for whatever the specific message they're trying to leave. But I think giving them a script is very often best. Would you think that would work with them?
Yes, I do. I think that's a great idea. I can give that to them on the first day. And, yes, I also wonder if they have communication skills, as you said, to just talk with people at work. I think they're very hesitant to use the phone to call someone to get information. They're used to texting people. They're not used to, like, verbal, real-time conversations. So,
yeah, I'm going to take one more shot at this, and then we're going to... So the answer, I think, is in group role plays. Why don't you have a group in which the whole sessions are all about role-playing those situations? You pick two people at a time to role-play, or you start by modeling.
Yeah.
So you model the right behavior. Then you say, okay, let's have a pair of volunteers, and you guys do it. And then you ask the rest of the group to give feedback to them on that.
Okay,
do you do enough of that role-playing?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. The reason I kind of rushed you, because I want to take one more call that maybe something that is more in Bruce's area. So welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Bruce Tulligan. What's your question or comment for him? Hello, are you there? No. Okay. Good. So I'm looking at the clock. Bruce, let's go back to that first question, that last question, for the question I wanted to ask you at the end. If you were giving a talk at a stadium, and it was filled with Gen Zers, people who are 15 to 25 years old, and the talk was titled Two or Three Most Important Work-Related Pieces of Advice for Gen Zers, what would those two or three points be?
Well, I'm in that situation often, and what I say to young people is get back to basics. You have all the newfangled tricks. That's great. What you're probably lacking in are a lot of the old-fashioned basics. And before you can bring your best every day to work, you need to be at your best. That means you got to take good care of yourself. It means you got to stay strong and healthy. It means you have to take good care of your mind. What are the main sources of input for your mind every day? You have to take good care of your body. When do you sleep? When do you eat and drink? What do you eat and drink? What kind of stuff do you put in your body? When do you exercise? Are you taking good care of your spirit and your heart? Do you know what you believe? That's the number one thing. And then all the other basics. You have to bring a good attitude to work. If you don't feel good, smile and say golly. You have to be high quality. That means
hold yourself to a high standard. Dot your I's and cross your T's. If you don't know, ask. Don't pretend to know stuff you don't know. It means be full of integrity. If you have a boss who wants you to lie, cheat, steal, or harm others, don't do that. But that's the easy part. The hard part of integrity is going out of your way to make things right when it might go wrong. Be adaptable. Don't focus on the jerks at work. Make sure you're not a jerk. Approach relationships from the vantage point of what you bring to the table. Don't make excuses. Don't take yourself too seriously, but always take your work and your obligations seriously. Those are the kinds of old-fashioned basics. Even say please and thank you, show up early and stay late, and don't take long breaks. Those are the old-fashioned basics that somehow are not being taught nowadays.
Well, you know what? I want to push back a little bit. Just, you know, most of me agrees with you, but there's always another side. I consider myself very Talmudic. I'm always looking for the other side. Most people who are graduating college these days, especially here in the Bay Area, have been taught that business is evil and that business is unethical and that the worker is taken advantage of by the evil company that makes the profits on the backs of the worker. And so the message you've been basically have been saying is kind of, you know, be respectful, learn, play the game, play the system, be, you know, within ethics, but basically respecting the boss. Well, if you've graduated college, especially in the last 5 or 10 years, you've been given the message that the man sucks, that the whole basis of the Occupy movement is we need to redistribute income away from the corporations, from the companies, and let's give it to the workers. Screw the man. And so what do you say to people who say, you know what, I am not going to go and just kiss butt to these evil corporate types or, you know, these in the for-profit world? What would you say to the millions and millions of people who are in Gen Z for whom that is a core, that is what they have been educated at college?
Well, you know, my view is you should do research and make sure you're going to work someplace that you feel good about. And not only that, but otherwise, look, start your own business. And then I promise you, you're going to be taking out the trash. You're going to be cleaning the toilet. And when you finally get some customers, then you're going to be saying, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, because they're the ones who are paying you. And the good news is work is a transactional relationship, at least at its core. You go in for a cup of coffee. You don't feel bad asking for a cup of coffee because you're going to pay for it. And likewise, employers are not asking you to come volunteer. They're going to pay you. So you have to keep your eyes open and your ears open. You have to do research. You have to make sure you go work someplace that you feel good about. You have to make sure that you fit in. You need to know what matters to you on a deep level, know what you believe, know what you can't support, know what you can't stand for. And then you need to understand the culture and the values of your organization. And if you're feeling out of place at work, maybe there's a values disconnect. If you don't want to wear a uniform, don't try to become a police officer or a firefighter, or don't join the military. If you don't believe in eating meat, don't go work at Burger King. You have to know what you stand for, and you need to go work for an organization that you can feel good about. And then my view is it's always the right thing to bring your very best to the table all day long. And if you're someplace where you don't want to bring your best to the table, you should be looking around for something else, or you should start your own business.
Bruce, I want to thank you for bringing your best to the table. Bruce Colgan has been my guest here on Work with Marty Nemko. His books include Managing Generation X and Not Everyone Gets a Trophy, subtitled How to Manage Gen Y. Thanks again, Bruce, for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you. And my thanks to my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I'll do 3-minute career makeovers on callers. And if there was a Bay Area motto, it might be follow your passion or do what you love and the money will follow. But we all know people who did what they loved and poverty followed. When should you do what you love? Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.